Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshall, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at YP Sport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
As mentioned earlier in the intro, this week we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshall. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Right. This week we saw a number of good results for our Yorkshire teams, which included a return to second place for Leeds United, thanks to their 2-0 victory over Plymouth Argyle. Middlesbrough claimed all 3 points with a stunning 2-1 victory over league leaders Leicester City, which we will be covering a bit more later on in the episode. Sheffield Wednesday claimed a valuable 3 points with a 2-0 victory over Millwall. Barnsley continued their march for promotion with a 2-1 victory when they visited Fleetwood Town. In League 2, Bradford City claimed their third win in a row with a 1-0 victory over Sutton United. Harrogate Town had to share the points in their 0-0 draw with Crewe Alexandra. And Doncaster Rovers claimed an impressive 5-1 victory away at Grimsby Town. But this week we start in the Premier League, where Sheffield United suffered a crushing 5-0 defeat at the hands of Brighton and Hove Albion, in which Mason Holgate received a red card for an horrific challenge, which caught Kaoru Mitoma early in the first half. The Blades now sit 7 points off safety. What was your assessment of the game, and how do you think they'll go into their trip to Wolverhampton Wanderers, Stuart?
Well, it was quite hard to assess the game in the sense that it was totally skewed by that red card 13 minutes in. As soon as there are some teams you can get away with being a man down against. You know, the lower down the leagues you get, sometimes actually having a man sent off can be to your advantage. But against the passing team of Brighton's qualities, you really can't afford to be a man down. They'll pull you left, right and centre. They move the ball so quickly and so well. So as soon as Mason Holgate had that moment of madness, Sheffield United were always on a hiding to nothing. I guess the positive thing for them was that having conceded 2 quick goals after that red card, they then kept it at 2-0 for another 50 minutes. They even had a goal disallowed somewhat farcically in that spell. So there was that positive they could take out of it. But, you know, the fact is this is 3 games running now, and, you know, different context to all of those, but 3 home games running, they've conceded 5 goals in. That's a massive problem. And as Chris Wilder pointed out, it's not just the goals themselves, it's the fact that they tend to come in spurts. So the two were very close together, and then 3 in 10 minutes. And that just points to lack of concentration, perhaps, maybe lack of confidence, certainly lack of leadership. So these are all things that they really need to address, because, as I say, it's really important for the fans who are paying to watch these games as much as anything, that they're at the very least putting up a good showing, no matter what circumstances are created for themselves. So I think they need to produce a reaction at Wolves, as they did, in fairness, at Luton Town, and give the fans who have travelled down there, you know, some justification for having paid the money and made the effort to go down there. But, you know, there's clearly big problems there in terms of those, you know, defensive bad habits that they've got, and that's certainly something that they'll be looking to address on the training ground.
It's been, for me, Stuart, it's been one of the, if not the sort of defining theme of the season, the defence. We're speaking about, we've seen plenty of Sheffield United in the good times with them in coming up from the Championship, and the bedrock there has been that sort of defensive organisation, spirit, unity, all those sort of things. And it's just sort of flip the other way for various reasons. I've obviously had some very untimely injuries. We obviously John Egan, a big defensive leader. I think Armin Hodgic has found the step up difficult, which, you know, he was going to do, really, wasn't he? You know, he had a fantastic first season in English football last year, but this is a huge jump, isn't it? And you know, various other selection issues, defence with injuries, Chris Basham, and they just never got it right, have they? And I think they sort of had work to do in the summer window when they addressed, you know, obviously they brought Hamer in, they brought Archer in, but there was always that sort of glaring sort of deficiency at the back. They still looked a little bit short. I know they bought Trusty in, but there's another one who's, you know, unproven at a Premier League level. We spoke about needing that clubs in the past about getting championship ready players. Sheffield United, to me, they haven't had that, you know, that defensive ready player at Premier League level. And I think amongst the problems that they've had, that's been a significant one. What is it, 36 goals they've conceded at home, isn't it? And
yeah, 12.
They've played 12, is it, or 13? That's, you know, sort of almost three a game, isn't it, really? And I think amongst the problems that they have, for me, that one's, I know you've seen a lot more of them than I have, but that's right at the top for me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's glaring that they haven't strengthened that back four, back five, but also, you know, they lost Tommy Doyle, and Vinicius Souza has come in and done a job as the holding midfielder. But for the amount of money they were paying for him and the fact that he's not played in the division before, it was always a gamble as to whether he'd be Premier League standard, you know, from the start. So it sort of extends beyond the defence itself. There's been a lack of protection in front. But yeah, Leon's absolutely right. I mean, you know, when you're a promoted side, it's very, very hard to find, be able to afford and attract, you know, a really copper-bottomed, hang your hat on, Premier League goal scorer. So you really have to be solid at the back to make up for it. And I think that's been Burnley's undoing as well, but to an even greater extent, as the numbers show, Sheffield United. And I'd say some of it is not just about, you know, the ability to tackle and mark the men. It's the mental qualities which those splurges of goals point to, and maybe a bit of leadership as well. Of course, they're without the captain and the vice captain through injury, and I think all these things have added up. But certainly the organisational and the leadership element is something they can work on the training ground, and they really do have to, because, you know, they've got. Gaps to make up in terms of their ability, let's be honest.
Yeah. I think that's it. The teams at the bottom, they're there for a bottom for a reason. You know, they're not going to get out of trouble by blowing away teams, are they? They're going to do it by, you know, grafting and sort of being organised and not nicking wins, but, you know, just being solid and have some sort of consistency defensively. And sort of none of the real teams at the bottom have done that in particular. And yeah, I mean, Sheffield, they did the work last sort of summer in the window. They were a bit behind the eight ball. They were losing a bit of time. Sorted one or two areas, but, you know, they just for me, they didn't manage to sort it out defensively. And then you get to January and you probably look at the position and think, well, are we going to spend a lot of money to bring a defender in, when realistically, are we going to stay up? And obviously, there's the ownership situation as well. So yeah, it is something they'll, you know, have to address. I think in the here and now, they've just got to try and get a bit of pride, haven't they, Stuart? I mean, you look at the good thing, if there is any, from what I can see this season, is that one or two of the younger players, the Andre Brooks, the Willisula, they've been blooded, and sort of looking at it from a United perspective, can their evolution, their development continue for the rest of the season? Can they do well? You know, personally, they've got some big games coming up: the Man United's, Liverpool's, Arsenal's. You know, if personally they can get something out of that, and there can be some sort of, you know, decent collective performances in terms of pride and a bit of hope, then I think Sheffield United fans will take that at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear that Wilder's been brought in to as a rebuilder.
Yeah,
rather than as a firefighter, like, for example, Neil Warnock at Huddersfield last season. This is about the longer term, and great if it has an impact on the short term and sorts things out. But you can see the forward thinking with the likes of Asula and Brooks, and it looks like Arblaster might be next. And that's That's good to see. I mean, you often hear at this time of year when teams are struggling down there or chucking the kids, and managers are very reluctant to do it because, you know, you can expose them, you can break them, quite frankly. But these have been brought in reasonably sensibly. They've not been thrown in en masse. They've been dipped in and out. And I think that's the way to go, because clearly when you don't have money, or much money, and you've got an academy producing decent players, that is your solution, really, isn't it?
Yeah, they've always traditionally they've had a decent academy as well, haven't they? So you might as well, if it's there, you might as well use it. Yeah,
absolutely.
And next we turn our attention to Rotherham United, who suffered a 1-0 defeat against Watford, which was then followed by an agonising 4-3 defeat when they paid a visit to promotion-chasing Ipswich Town. This now sees the Millers 14 points off safety and in a situation which is becoming more and more desperate as the season goes on. Leon, what was your assessment of the game, and is it a case of the team just making sure that they go down with some fight at this point?
Well, they certainly did that in the game on Tuesday night at Ipswich. Pushed them all the way, and it was, you know, was following the scores a little bit towards the end, and obviously they got the penalty from Cafu, and he sort of reprised the Kudenka of, was it Somerville the other week? And yeah, I mean, a glorious moment for Leeds as well. I mean, they must have been all jumping up and down, and what a night it promised to be for them with Southampton losing as well. But I think it's just symptomatic of Rotherham's season, isn't it? That, yeah, you know, they're scoring there. What was it? The second or third minute of stoppage time, and Ipswich go up the other end of the score. I've got to be honest. I watched the Sky Sports midweek soccer show, and as soon as Clinton Morrison said there were 5 minutes left, I thought there's loads of time here to go up the other end. Unfortunately, it was true. I mean, you just got to feel for Rotherham on a bit of a human level for the supporters who went down there. They haven't won away from home in 15, 16 months. And, you know, seeing the team this season, it's hard enough for Rotherham to compete at this level at the best of times. But they've had horrendous injuries. They've had some rough refereeing calls. There's issues with players' fitness. And it was interesting what he said on Saturday, Liam Richardson. You know, he's got to be mindful of looking at the schedule, especially when they've got Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday games. There's players there who aren't 100% in terms of the fitness, are just coming back. You know, the Lee Peltiers and Sean Morrison's, Sam Cluck, there's plenty of others. You know, you can't just sort of, he's got to be really mindful of the match minutes there. So that's another problem amongst the other issues that he's having to juggle with. So, yeah, I think you sort of look at it on a simple level. Obviously, Rotherham, look, they're going to go down, let's face it. I think the first port of call is hopefully just some giving it a go and some pride in the performances, and they certainly did that against Ipswich. And I'm sure the supporters they're a pretty stoic bunch. They've had to be this season, and, you know, there'll be a bit of pain of what happened at the end against Ipswich, but yeah, you know, they can take a lot from that performance. They can sort of look back and think, well, look, we might have lost out right at the death, but we give it a good go there. And, you know, it was entertaining. That's what they did. And, yeah, hopefully they can show some more of that. And I think also they look at the games. They've got QPR, Sheffield Wednesday. If they can get a couple of results there, then, you know, there's a bit of a chance that they still might be in it, not to finish bottom. I know it's sort of, look, it's small beer in the greater scheme of things. They're gonna go down. But, you know, if they can manage to fight and not finish bottom, I suppose that's something. But I went on Saturday. It was one of those. I mean, and what Stuart thinks as well. When we've seen Rotherham this season, they've not got hammered that many times. There was obviously the Watford game that accounted for Matt Taylor. They had a couple of good hidings against Stoke at the start of the season. But they've been in a lot of games. You know, they're honest, they're organised. I think Liam Richardson's come in and he's made them, generally speaking, he's made them more organised, structured defensively, and harder to sort of break down, even though I know they lost heavily at Ipswich, and Victor Johansson didn't have the best game, which is surprising, really, given his very high standards. But, you know, he's done that. And, yeah, they've just been in game, but there's just no respite for them whatsoever, whereas in terms of the schedule, in terms of the injuries they've had, in terms of the calibre of opponent. And they played all right on Saturday, I thought, but it was just one moment from the Watford winger, won them the game. And that's just the way it's been going for him, isn't it?
I mean, just then when you were talking about how the way that their season's been going, whenever you're a team at the bottom of any division, really, it's almost as if you're almost attracting everything to come at you at once, be it unexpected injuries, heavy defeats, week after week, and it just seems as though it's never ending. Which I think is almost the case for Rotherham at this stage. Go on, Stuart.
Well, I mean, it points again to what Leon was saying before. When you're chasing results and you've got play, you know, they've signed a lot of players the last couple of years who haven't had a proper pre-season or have got patchy injury records and what have you. So when you're pushing them harder than they probably should be pushed. And I say pushing them harder, probably in most of those cases, the player themselves is saying, no, I want to play that extra 10 minutes. It's not necessarily the manager's fault. But when you're doing that, that in itself causes injuries and you just get into this cycle. You know, whereas if you're in the luxury of being a Man City of your division, you genuinely can pick and choose and rest players and get away with it. But yeah, I just feel with Rotherham, I feel actually as though they're a better team almost against the better sides, because they love that situation where they don't have to force the pace, but they really do have to battle. And I think, you know, I think when we look back on Rotherham at the end of the season, we'll be looking at all the things Leon's mentioned. But the one thing we won't be able to say is they didn't fight. And I think so long as you can say that at the end of the season, I think you can look yourself in the mirror then and accept that, you know, if you don't have the quality, if you don't have the look and all these other things to compete with other teams, well, you know, you just don't have it. But you can guarantee or you can control how much you put into games, and that's the thing about this Rotherham team. It's a couple of times away from home before Liam Richardson's time, where it feels like they have just collapsed a bit, but that apart, so they seem to address that now under Richardson, and you know you're going to get a wholehearted performance from Rotherham. It might well not result in any points or certainly a win, but they're going to give everything at least, and that's really important that the fans see that. It's important for the players' futures, whether they want to stay at Rotherham or move on. And we are still seeing that, and that, I say that's really, really vital.
Yeah, Mark's right. When teams at the bottom, things get on top of you, don't they? And you know, it's almost like they're playing a game of Monopoly, and every community chess card or chance card, it's a bad one, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's been that sort of season. But I think Stuart's right. I think in the here and now, they've just got to claw some pride, sort of, just not just battling, hopefully some, you know, proactive and enterprising performances to hang the hat on. Then you'll get to the summer, and then no doubt we'll probably speak about this in future episodes. But there's a lot of things they've got to turn around at that club. There's obviously widespread issues, and in terms of the training facilities that have been needed to be resolved for a good while. There's getting the recruitment right. There's Richardson getting the players he wants, and an ethos of play and a style. And I think those things, hopefully it looks, you know, Rotherham in League One next season, they've shown a penchant for coming straight back up. But I think you sort of look at it and think there's bigger sort of problems, and it's not just all about them coming back up, isn't it? It's about, you know, even if it takes a year or two, getting them really ship shape. Mm-hmm. So when they come back to the Championship, they can hopefully stay there, because, you know, the Championship environment it's really changed over the... I mean, I worked on the local paper in Rotherham, showing my age now, a couple of decades ago. But the Championship then, there were five or six clubs that were always in a similar boat to Rotherham, whether it's a Walsall, a Grimsby, Gillingham, you know, sort of similar sort of size club. But now the Championship, it's just, there's no really other clubs, if you look at it, that really sort of compete with Rotherham, probably budget-wise Plymouth, but they're even, you know, they're a sort of bigger club in terms of fan base, this, that and the other. But that's what they're sort of having to contend with when they come back to, when they're playing the Championship. And I think whenever they do come back, hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later, then they can get themselves in just the best possible position on a lot of levels, not just in terms of the actual players they've got, but, you know, training ground, infrastructure, blah, 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 to give themselves a real chance of consolidating at this level, because it's just sort of a bit rinse and repeat at the minute, isn't it?
I think they've got to rethink the whole strategy when they're in the championship, because basically at the moment it's come up, and because we're working with a low budget, we'll gamble on players with experienced championship records who are cheap, which normally means that the fitness isn't great. You know, likes of Daniel Ayala, likes of Sean Morrison coming in without pre-season, blah-de-blah-de-blah. So that's then compounded if you have a training ground where the pitches aren't great, and that makes you more vulnerable to injury. And the other element is they kind of play this back foot football, which is, you know, again, understandable when you're in that position, but they're causing themselves problems within matches as well, because they can't keep the ball. So it tends to be attack after attack after attack after attack at them. You know, I saw them play against Hull and they scored very early on, but then they just naturally sat back and invited problems. And that's the issue with Rotherham, whether it be on the field or off the field, they're inviting their own problems. So they have to try and get into a space where the next time they're playing in the championship, they're not inviting those problems to quite the same extent. And it's much easier said than done, because they've got to deal with the financial realities of it. But nevertheless, they do have to find a way, and to do it a level down where you've obviously got more things in your favour, that's the time to really get your head around it and get it right.
I just hope Liam Richardson does get the time, because, you know, when you probably same as me, Stuart, when you've listened to him, he's, you know, there's a lot of intelligence and experience to what he's saying, and, you know, he's been brought in on a 3-year deal. He'll need the time to sort of implement the changes he wants, and he'll need the patience, I think, from supporters as well. I mean, there could be a... The one thing about Rotherham is that they have been used to relegations, but they've been used to promotions as well. So there could be a stage early next season, say in theory, you get to, I don't know, October, something like that, and there might be 10th, 11th, 12th in League One, and there could be one or two, you know, grumbles from some supporters sort of saying, well, you know, this isn't looking good, this, that and other. But there's got to be a realisation of the bigger picture at Rotherham if they're going to turn it round sustainably over time, isn't it? That's what I think anyway.
I mean, you look at Ipswich now, who are flying in the championship, and when Kieran McKenna came in, I think there was probably an expectation among the fan base that they would, you know, push for the playoffs and make them that season. And he had a decent chunk of that season, wasn't able to do it. And there would have been some in the fan base who wanted him sacked then, but he needed that time to get the foundations in place. And I say, even though Liam Richardson's going to end up with about 6 months of this season, I think the work that needs doing, and a lot of it can't be done until the summer, is so fundamental that he probably needs a good 12, 18 months before he can get to grips with it, which is why Leon's saying they might not go up next season, but so long as they go up in the right health is the most important thing, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and obviously Ipswich are a far, you know, bigger club than
Rotherham. Absolutely.
You look
but
at
even
League.
With them, you know, it takes time.
League One as well, it's a tough division. You know, you look at some of the teams there that have, you know, there's some ex-Premier League teams there as well who've, you know, your Charltons and the Stanley Lewis. The pitch took Portsmouth time, so it's not straightforward, but there should be a bigger picture at Rotherham, hopefully.
And just one other thing, Leo mentioned about not finishing bottom. Of course, who might finish bottom if Rotherham don't is an extra incentive for them as well.
Exactly, yeah.
The team that they love to beat more than any other, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly.
So basically, I think it's just a matter of getting their priorities right and basically
looking long.
There's a short term one, isn't there? Finishing the season hopefully with a bit of pride. There's a medium term and there's a long term one. And you know, Liam Richardson seems to get it, and I think they're sort of in probably the best hands they could be really at this stage, I think.
And now we turn our attention to the Yorkshire clash between Huddersfield Town and Hull City, in which Huddersfield Town thought they'd snatched a draw in the 92nd minute before Hull City had other ideas and secured all 3 points 2 minutes later through a Jacob Greaves winner, which was then followed by a 2-1 victory when Hull City paid a visit to Southampton. And this result saw the Tigers return to the playoff spots. We also saw news of Huddersfield Town announcing the appointment of Andre Breitenreiter as their new head coach.
Big announcement.
Cheers. Now, what can both Huddersfield Town and Hull City take from this result between the two of them? And what are your thoughts on Breitenreiter's arrival, Stuart?
I actually think they can both take an awful lot from it. I think on Saturday night, Huddersfield weren't felt any positives because, you know, whenever you lose in those circumstances, when you've equalised in the second minute of stoppage time and you've lost it in the third minute of stoppage time, that's about as painful as it gets. Yeah. I think the way they played over the course of the game. It was the first game I think Breitenreiter had watched from the stand, and I've obviously seen plenty of them on the DVDs. Well, I got called a granddad, I think, for mentioning DVDs nowadays. Whatever you use, streams or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Cassettes or whatever. To actually see it in the flesh, there's a lot there to work with. I mean, Leon's seen a couple of John Worthington's games as well, and they've really been a good showcase to a new manager of, look, this is what this team is actually capable of. You know, they've seen a team that's able to press high, which, you know, we understand is a big thing for Breitenreiter and how he wants to play, that can get on the front foot, that can get the crowd involved in the game. All these things that were lacking under Darren Moore, we've seen that it's not that they weren't capable of them. It's just that, you know, with the right situations, they are within them. So I think he'll have gone away from that saying, yeah, okay, the result was not the result we wanted, and the way we conceded the winning goal was poor, but, you know, there are things there. And to be honest, to concede a poor winning goal, it's obviously not great in the short term and in terms of morale and everything. But again, it's in your face there as manager. There's no hiding from it. Right, that's an obvious problem. That's what I'm going to work on the training ground this week. So even that was good. And from a Hull perspective, you know, I saw them twice last week, saw them at Rotherham as well. And neither of them were easy wins. You know, and sometimes a team that plays football as well as Hull on their day, you kind of associate them with, well, they can win easy. Can they win in difficult circumstances? Yeah. But I think for all their inconsistency, I think Hull have definitely got that in them. I saw those two matches, saw them win at Middlesbrough. That sticks in my mind as another game where they really had to grind something out. So Liam Rossini will be delighted with that. Scored very early through Jacob Greaves and then did a lot of defending, but defended really well. I didn't give up many good chances. It was largely keeping Huddersfield at arm's length. So Rossini could take a lot of that. I think at that stage it was four wins out of five, and you can see where the confidence came from to then go to Southampton and get that result, which, as I say, I kind of feel Hull have got that in them, and that if they get into the playoffs, they are capable of doing something. The question is, just can they get enough consistency and get the results to do that? And since what I sort of looked at as a sort of mini break for them when they were out of the FA Cup, they had a couple of weeks on the training ground. That's what I think. Five wins out of six now. They feel like they're finding a bit of rhythm. I mean, they still don't really. They've still got to work out the centre forward position. They still don't really have anyone sort of defined there who they seem like they can rely on from the start. Billy Sharp hasn't scored yet. Looks like he might be more effective from the bench at this stage. But generally, things are coming together. Confidence is there, and I think for both it was a day that if you take the emotion of the, well, from a Huddersfield perspective, if you take the emotion of the result out of it, from a Hull perspective, if you really lean on that, it was a good day for both.
I think that's the thing with Hull, Stuart. I mean, you look at the players they bought in January. They've clearly got match winners who, well, you can go back to the summer window as well with Philogy. Obviously brought, you know, the likes of Carvalho in January. They've got match winners on the day who can win games at this level. But I think probably the thing that's just been is just as impressive for me is the way that they've sort of found different ways to win. They obviously had three away games in a week, two Yorkshire derbies, going to Rotherham and Huddersfield. That brings its own challenges. Two sides scrapping. Then they've had a short turnaround and gone to a side who haven't lost at home since something like the end of September, wasn't it? So found different ways to win. There's obviously ground it out at Huddersfield, and obviously they were behind at Rotherham as well. So that's been as impressive for me as anything, really. And they did have some sort of wobbles, didn't they, early on in the winter away from home.
Yeah.
They were having some, you know, I think they did lose to Bristol City, and they lost one or two other games. And Rossini sort of called out the sort of softness in conceding goals a little bit. So that's a positive from their respect. The interesting one now is Hull. They've sort of gone from being the sort of hunter to the hunted a little bit, haven't they, really? They've got a massive game against, is it West Brom, isn't it, on Saturday? So it'll be psychologically interesting to see how they deal with that. I think they're probably ready for it, aren't they, really? And in terms of the development at the minute, and they're flying high. And, I mean, in terms of Huddersfield, he seems a good footballing fit, you know, the front foot football. He's not overly, seems to be overly bothered about possession, you know, high energy. That style just really seems to suit Huddersfield, doesn't it? And, you know, Tom Lee spoke the other week how John Worthington had come in and he'd gone back to sort of that front foot style, and the players were really happy with it. And I just think Brian Wright, he's come in, Huddersfield are in a bit of a sticky situation. I just hope he doesn't do too much initially, really. You know, at the minute, they've got, what, 10, 12 games, whatever it is. The first port of call is getting enough wins and points, however they come, to stay in the division. Then he gets to the summer and he can, you know, the real sort of, you know, tactical nuances that he wants his side to show in the play. That's when he can sort of go to town in that respect and get a full season behind his players. But I think, first of all, I mean, you obviously go into the press conference with him, Stuart. The thing that I would want to see more than anything is his, what's he like as a character and an individual? Is he an inspirational guy? His command of English seems really good. What's he like as a personality and as a bloke, almost? You know, to get these players together for the first short term aim, which is to get themselves out of trouble and hopefully have, you know, get enough points and then maybe have a bit of fun when he gets to April. But first of all, I would certainly not blind the players with science and overcomplicate it.
Yeah.
To be fair to John Worthington, he's hit on a strategy that the players are comfortable with, they enjoy, and they're competent at playing. You know, they've had some pretty good performances, and probably a little caveat with the game against Hull. It was a short turnaround, wasn't it? I'm not saying that's an excuse for the result, but when you look at the style that they sort of play, and you know, he spoke about Worthington, all the players emptying the tank, and when they're tired out, he'll throw them off, bring someone else on. It's a tough ask against a good Hull side to sort of get them lower levels of performance, isn't it, really? So I had a little bit of sympathy there.
It is, but I don't think that was really reflected in the performance, to be fair. I think they did keep going all the way. It was a 92nd minute equaliser. I mean, maybe the mental switch off between the equaliser and the winner.
I think, you know, it was Rodoni who was marking him. That's what I was.
It was, yes, exactly. So maybe that was a bit of mental tiredness. But I think up until that point, they have been pushing and pushing for the goal. It wasn't a case of them running out of steam. I mean, one thing I'd like to see. You know, he's announced his new training team, and he's brought in Kevin Russell from the B team. So there's that English connection, along with people he trusts. I hope that he involves Worthington a bit, because Worthington's got an important job at the academy, and particularly the way Huddersfield are going to go, that's why he's keen to get back to it. But I just think in the short term, he's done a really good job of paving the way for Brian Wright. So I think it would help that transition if he could do it, because as Leon says, you don't want to change too much too quickly, but the things Worthington has already changed should play into his hands. So if there can be that bit of continuity, if he can help out, that might cut a few corners and just speed things up, because as Leon says, the bulk of the work will be done in the summer. And when you bring in a manager like him, who's new to the league, maybe looking to change things a bit, you're more comfortable with them coming in the summer. But that's not to say that they can't make changes during the season. You just, as Leon says, you're just wary of doing too much too quickly.
Yeah. I think he's spot on, Stuart. I think you sort of think about, you know, academy players developing your own to bring them into the first team. Surely that should be the case with sort of over time with good good sort of coaches as well. And,
yes,
you know, Worthington falls into that black bracket. It's his club. He knows the club. You know, his career graph is good at the minute. He's happy in a job to do with the academy. But, you know, 3-4 years down the line, he'll be hopefully wanting to make that step up to be, you know, a number one at a senior club. And, you know, in an ideal world, that'll be Huddersfield, won't it? You know, if everything goes, that's the way I see it anyway. I mean, hopefully his time will come in that regard. I think he's happy where he is at the minute, isn't he? And he's not particularly wants to sort of dip his toes in it at the moment. So I just hope that, I think they will do, that they can, you know, his sort of career curve can develop. And as you said, Stuart, giving him some more experience with the first team when the time arises, it'd be beneficial for everyone, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I did ask him on Saturday night, and it's clear he's got a bit of a taste for it. I mean, Leon and I have seen it so many times where you get a caretaker coming in. No, I don't want the job full time. No. I don't want the job full time. Yeah. And suddenly they win a few games and they think, oh, I would quite like this. Yeah. You know? And it doesn't seem like Worthington's gone the full way. Because as I say, developing their academy is really, really important to the strategy of that football club. He understands that. He wants to be part of it. But I think it has made him feel like, yeah, maybe when the time is right, I'd like to come back to this. And you always like to see, you know, a boyhood fan, an ex-player, as a manager. When you're a supporter, it just gives you that extra feeling that he's one of us. He understands what we want. So you can never do it on sentiment. But if you've got somebody who's there and ready and shown the qualities, then why not encourage them, as Leon says, by just giving him the right opportunities over the next couple of years? Don't rush him. But when the time comes, there he is, ready to go.
Continuity, isn't it, as well?
Yeah. And next we turn to Middlesbrough, who, like I mentioned at the top of the episode, claimed a stunning 2-1 victory over Leicester City, and by doing so completed the league double over the division leaders. What did you make of the performance? And seeing as Leicester City's next opponents will be Leeds United, how do you think Daniel Farke will be approaching that game, Leon?
Yeah, well, in terms of, it was typical Middlesbrough, wasn't it? Let's be honest. I mean, you look at it, they've got 1 point out of six against Rotherham. We've no disrespect whatsoever to Rotherham, but they are bottom of the league. They've lost at home to QPR. They've drawn at Sheffield Wednesday. I think they lost at home to Millwall as well. But, you know, on the other side, they've beaten Leicester twice. They've beaten West Brom. So it's a little bit chalk and cheese, isn't it? But yeah, a good result. The interesting thing from a Borough perspective, he changed his tactics, and I think he's outflanked his Leicester opponent twice. Michael Carrick is the possession-based team, Middlesbrough, but he's sort of basically gone, look, you can have the ball, Leicester. We're going to switch to a three-man defence and try and hit them on the break. And it's worked very well twice, hasn't it, really? You look at Middlesbrough, I think on the day they can compete with any team, but it is that consistency. We spoke before about the lack of clinical edge in the final third, and that's probably going to be telling at the end of the season, isn't it? But there's an argument to say, well, look, they're probably keeping a bit back for the summer. What's the point in throwing loads of money at it in January when, you know, the top four is pretty much boxed off and there's not really a massive chance to go up? But, I mean, they've still got the faintness of sniffs, I suppose, for the playoffs, although results didn't go for them in the week. But they've got to become more consistent at home. When you look at the home form at the minute, they've really slipped up in that regard. And it was strong last year. That was one of the sort of bedrocks of getting in the playoffs. Away from home, they seem to be okay. But I think it's the home in the here and now. It's the home form. And yeah, I mean, in terms of Leeds, I mean, I just sort of look at Leeds and they're just chugging along very, very nicely, aren't they, really? It's been pretty much, you know, it's been outstanding what they've done so far this new year. They had the dip at a little bit of a dip at Christmas. Daniel Farke, we've spoken about him lots and lots, and I'm sure we'll continue to. He's just not panicked in any way, shape or form. And the thing that's really impressed me is, more than any others, you know, after the Somervilles of this world, the Rooters, who were as good as anyone offensively, but so strong defensively. And I think the record's as good as Leicester now, isn't it? 26 they've conceded. They're sort of chalking off the clean sheets. And it just seems to be every challenge that gets thrown at Leeds, they seem to be ready for it. Obviously got a big one against Leicester on Friday. Then you sort of look next week, they've got the Chelsea Cup game on the Wednesday, short turnaround, then they've got to go to Huddersfield on the Saturday lunchtime. There's no respite the week after. They've got, I think they'll end up playing Saturday, Tuesday, Friday, isn't it? They've got Sheffield Wednesday. So all these things, these hurdles having to contend with. You look at the recent run and they've been travelling all over the place, haven't they? Plymouth twice and Swansea, Bristol City. Everything obstacle that's arrived there, they've sort of jumped it, haven't they? And just all power to Daniel Farker. And I think the unity and the collective resolve of that group as well. I mean, we speak a lot about the talent they've got, and they've got a hell of a lot in the final third. They've got some real leaders there, haven't they? You know, the Rodons and Ampadu as well. They've got some proper players there at Leeds. I think the interesting one from a championship perspective is when the next setback is, because it will arrive at some point. Yeah, you know, so it's how they cope with that. But I don't know what Stuart thinks, but I think that at the minute there doesn't seem to be many teams who've got a stronger mindset than Leeds.
No, I think they'll shrug it off. I mean, we've only seen one back-to-back defeat for them this season. You know, we've got Southampton having their wobble now, and they've lost two in three. The thing for them is, can they nip that in the bud, or will this escalate?
Yeah,
when it happens with Leeds United, precisely because of those leaders Leon's talked about, and because of that manager. Yeah. You do believe that they just keep level-headed and see it through. I mean, I say December wasn't great, but nor was it as a disaster either. And I think sometimes when we talk about leaders, we tend to look at birth certificates and just assume, oh, he's quite old, he'll be a leader. Yep. He's quite young, he won't be. Yep. I mean, Ethan Ampadu's what, 24, Leon?
Yeah, he's not by no means a veteran, is he? No.
Exactly, Joe Rodon as well. Exactly, you know that. It's not. Leeds are quite a young team, but they're not a team without leaders. I mean, you know, for starters, they've got leaders on the bench and in the dressing room with the likes of Cooper, and obviously earlier in the season Ayling, now Connor Roberts and players like that. But they've got young players who've really stepped up and really sort of embraced that atmosphere that Daniel Farker has created. And I think that's the difference between them and a team like Middlesbrough, who've got all the ability to beat a team like Leicester City, but don't have that steadiness and that reliability. And I think from Middlesbrough's perspective, we've talked a lot the last couple of weeks about next season as opposed to this. I think when Middlesbrough look at it, they've got a couple of things to address. One, the sort of centre forward and just general goal scoring situation. You know, they obviously cracked it second half of last season with Cameron Archer. They need to find another solution. And two, this season they've had a lot of injuries. They've got to ask themselves, and I don't know the answer to this, to what extent those are sort of self-inflicted with, you know, training methods, facilities and all this sort of thing, or to what extent they're bad luck. But they need to really get a grip with that as well, because that has undermined them this season. And I say it could purely be bad luck, but they need to answer those questions.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, Stuart. I mean, interesting, you know, just quickly going back to Leeds, I think, you look at them, you know, they were, you know, at the end of last season, they just looked a team of individuals, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I think that, for me, that's probably the biggest achievement of Farker. He's just created a culture again, isn't it? It's a proper Leeds United dressing room, isn't it? And, you know, he's not interested in excuses. And they've just come together in a pretty short space of time, really. And there was disruption at the start of the season as well, wasn't there? With certain players, a transfer window. So I think that's, you know, to do that pretty quickly is remarkable.
And let's be brutally honest, there were players who could have seriously disrupted that. I mean, I'm not speaking out of turn to say that we know that Willy Nonto wanted to leave. Yeah. We know that Jed Spence got sent back from his loan.
Yeah.
I think we can safely say because Farker wasn't too pleased with his attitude. Yeah. But when you've got a strong dressing room, you can deal with one or two players like that. You can put them in the place. And now Nonto's, you know, become a key player for them. That's the real strength of a strong dressing room. It can outlast, for example, Luke Ayling's presence, you know, any individual's presence, and it can sort of repel a couple of bad influences. Obviously, you can't have too many, but those sort of things could have sidetracked Leeds, but they're not at all.
Yeah, I think I'd just, you know, look at the promotion race, strong dressing rooms. You've got to have a word for Ipswich, haven't you? They had that wobble at the, what was it, Christmas, going into the first bit of the new year. They'll have heard all the mood music saying, well, they're finished, they're going to drop away into the playoffs. They haven't, they've gone again, they've made a couple of buys. Kiefer Moore's, I think that's a great buy. But, you know, they've been asking questions of that dressing room and they're sort of answering it. I think they've won the last two or three now, so they're back in it. And even the way, as disappointing it was for Rotherham, that's a sign of a proper team, isn't it? They go behind in the second minute of stoppage time and they still have the wherewithal to dust themselves down and get a goal. So don't discount Ipswich.
And that's why Leeds have to be on it. You know, all of those three teams are pushing each other really, really hard. Yeah. And so the standard has got to be high from Leeds and from the other two.
And finally for this week, I turn to Stuart for his Player of the Week before looking to Leon for his Team of the Week. So, Stuart, who has been your standout player this week?
Well, I've just touched on him. And the one that really sticks in my mind at the moment is Willie Nonto. As I say, he's had lots of reasons to be stroppy this season, quite frankly. You know, first of all, he didn't get the transfer he wanted. Then he couldn't get in the team because of the form of Daniel James. We've seen plenty of players where, you know, a player's been refused a transfer in January. The club's kept him on. Everyone's been delighted, and it's become pretty clear pretty quickly. They were better off not bothering because it was just a waste of time. Nonto, by contrast, he's knuckled down. He's had to wait for his opportunity because of Dan James, but James's injuries opened it up. 5 goals in 5 now. And it's Dan James who's struggling to get in the side. So hats off to Nonto. That's exactly how you want people to respond. And yeah, he's my Player of the Week for that.
And Leon, your Team of the Week?
Yeah, there's been one or two contenders. You know, I did Sheffield Wednesday's game the other week at Huddersfield and they were desperate defensively. And, you know, they've managed to turn it round and beat Birmingham. Huge result at Millwall. Were really down there, aren't they? And so that's impressive. You know, they're sort of battling away Sheffield Wednesday. I think Harrogate, after getting hammered, was it 9-2? They've gone away to a promotion chasing side, and they've got a 0-0 draw. So that was
an unchanged team as well.
Is that what it was?
It was an unchanged team. So that's a real go out and put it right.
Yeah, fair play. Doncaster Rovers, they seem to be turning it around a little bit. They've gone to Grimsby and scored some terrific goals, and that's probably as big a moment as they've had in the season, going down and winning 5-1. Fair play to them. Bradford City are chugging along nicely. They haven't, I don't think they've conceded a goal, have they? And in the league, it's about 4 or 5 games, so that's been good to see. They're in the mix, but I think you've got to go back to Hull City, haven't you? Really, I mean, they've 3 away wins on the spin, 2 derbies against sides who were about scrambling around for the points at the bottom, and then go into a team who've, I think they don't, you know, only in Southampton, only lost once in 25. Pretty impregnable at home. Hadn't been beaten since the end of, I think it was the end of September. So, yeah, they're running hot. Hull, they're on a real crest of a wave, and, you know, 9 points from 9 in an away week, you know, factor in travel, everything like that, you know, tremendous. And, it should be a great game on Saturday against West Brom.
I think basically what this means is we're just completely spoiled for quality in the EFL.
Well, yeah, that is, I think the good thing about it is how unpredictable it is as well, Mark. You know, who'd have thought that Rotherham would have gone to Ipswich and just be so close to getting something, you know, right at the end. But it's always been a great division in the Championship, and you look at the battles in League One and, you know, in League Two as well, that God knows how many teams are in the mix to get in the playoffs, the last playoff spot. I think you can go down to about 15th, 16th, and, you know, intriguing fight in League One as well. So it's good to see.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wopfel, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com. Or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening. Look after yourselves, and bye for now.